Good afternoon, everyone. I call the Senate Health and Social Services meeting to order at 3:30 p.m. Oh, can you? Sorry, we just lost the presentation there on the computer. We are meeting in room 205 in the Capitol Building in the Butrovich. We do have a quorum to conduct business with members Senator Tobin, Vice Chair Kaufman, Senator Geisel, Senator Dunbar, myself, Senator Wilson in attendance. We have Ms. Lisa filling in for Senate Records today. Thank you. And this afternoon we're hearing a briefing on the repeal of the 80th percentile rule by the Division of Insurance. Here in the committee room at the presentation table is Director Wingheyer. Also in the room we have Commissioner Sandy from the Department of Commerce. I always want to keep saying Division of Commerce. And also online we have Susan Mitchell and Jeff Pickert and Daniel Wickerson. Our civil division attorneys from the Division of Law. I know myself, and I'm sure some of other members here may have gotten questions from people that are interested in this, but there is an ongoing piece of litigation going on. So if you do ask a question, please understand that Director Wingheyer will be flagged down by her legal team to not to weigh in on that question because of that ongoing piece of litigation that is ongoing, just to give members a heads up. And with that, Director, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the committee for this opportunity to talk about the repeal of the 80th percentile. And I want to take a minute to extend a special congratulations to Senator Dunbar on his recent engagement. That was an unusual but nice event to watch, sir. As Senator Wilson, the chairman, has said, the repeal is under litigation. I think we'll be able to talk a lot about what your questions may be, but if it were to stray into some territory that, particularly Mr. Pickett, he as our defense counsel, thinks that I should not answer as an impact, then he will stop me, and I apologize for that, but it is what it is there with the lawsuit right now.
And so. Director, if you could, the mics, I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. Is that a little bit better?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to start off with kind of a who, what, where. And the first slide is, what was the 80th percentile regulation? And the piece here before you is the text of the 80th percentile. And the piece that we're going to discuss is where it says is equal to or greater than the 80th percentile of charges based on a statistically credible profile going forward. It is used in Alaska to pay out-of-network claims. So for healthcare, you have in-network, meaning there's a contract between the provider and your insurer or the payer, such if you were a Union Trust or AlaskaCare. That's considered in-network, where the rates are agreed upon, the fees are agreed upon. Out-of-network, that does not exist. So did the 80th percentile for regulated plans, regulated by the Division of Insurance, were paid under the 80th percentile. This regulation has been on the books since 2004, so 20 years. And it was passed because at that time there was a concern by consumers and by providers that reimbursements were too low, and in fact they were. The 80th percentile set a floor for healthcare reimbursements, insurance reimbursements to be paid for out-of-network. But the landscape has changed dramatically since 2004. And many providers have entered in-network agreements. And it's almost rare to find a provider who has not entered into a network agreement. The 80th percentile was never intended to eliminate balanced billing. Consumers would still have a balanced billing for out-of-network claims, even when paid at the 80th percentile, just as their deductible and their out-of-pocket coinsurance and copays would apply. Unfortunately, what we have seen is that over a period of time, the 80th percentile has had an impact on the cost of healthcare. And the cost of healthcare in Alaska, as it does everywhere, equates to the cost of healthcare insurance, and that's where the division comes in. How do we determine what the 80th percentile is? Insurers can use their own data if they have a large amount sampling of data to have a statistically credible profile, or most use an independent, not-for-profit organization headquartered in New York called Fair Health. Fair Health is not owned by an insurance company, and by law, they cannot be part of an insurer. It is the largest collection of private healthcare data. They maintain over 40 billion commercial insurance claims for over 10,000 CPT codes, healthcare services, and they add 2 billion claims a year. It is considered statistically significant in all 50 states and DC. It is certified by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid under the Department of Health and Human Services in DC as a national qualified entity, meaning it is statistically credible.
Yes, before you go on, Senator Giesel.
Well, yes, Director, are you taking questions during or after?
Okay. I'm fine to take them whenever.
Okay, so how many Alaskans are insured in network and how many out of network? Do you have that information?
I'm going to jump ahead a slide or two, and I don't have the number of people, through the chair, I don't have the number of people, Senator Giesel, but what I can tell you is that who was impacted by it. I said we're going to talk about who, what, when, why.
Mm-hmm.
The Division for Regulated State Plans is about 15% of Alaska's, so somewhere around 100, 120, depending on the day. We have never been more than 20%. It goes up and down, but we're about 15% as of 2022. Of Alaskans were in an insured plan, meaning the individual market or a small group or large group that's regulated by the division. In 2022 policy year, this chart shows we had $456 million in claims submitted in the individual and small group markets. Of that, $409 million were considered in network, and 47 million are out of network. So just a tad over 10% of the claims paid in those two markets were out of network. And those out of network providers are both in-state and out of state, just as a point of clarification, Senator Giesel. So I don't have the number of people, but I can tell you for our overall, the claims, it's about 10%, just a tad over 10% in 2022.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to go back to where we were on this. Hope I can get my slides back in order here. I think I need to go back one more. Okay, so we did this, and then why did we repeal? The division has had concerns, and we've had concerns from some of you have called us or your constituents have called us in purchasing healthcare insurance, and again, this is this 15% that we regulate, that the cost of healthcare insurance has become untenable. They cannot afford it. It just has gone up too high. There have been several studies, and they are updated annually. Some are older, some are newer. But inevitably, Alaska comes out as amongst the highest as respects the cost of healthcare and healthcare insurance. We've looked at studies from independent studies and academic groups, such as Robert Woods, the Kaiser Family Foundation, various universities, various articles that have been published in Ford, the Washington Post. There was an article this fall that talked about who were the highest paid healthcare physicians. I mean, we continually look at the data. And of course, we have access to the claims, aggregated claims data to see what is being paid. So we know why we know why the rates are going up. We know the cost of healthcare is going up. And we have taken this very, very seriously, but we have taken some steps that we have been, and we'll talk a minute about the reinsurance program. But the fact of the matter is we keep seeing that the cost of healthcare is high in Alaska and higher in other states, and we keep hearing from independent, the individual market, and from small groups and large groups employers, small groups being 50 to 100 employees and large groups 100 and more, that the cost of insurance is getting so that they cannot expand. They cannot hire, they cannot give raises because they can barely afford to pay for healthcare. And those groups are required to provide healthcare under the ACA. So it's not an option for them. We agree, and many providers would tell you that the cost of healthcare has gone up in the past few years. We agree. We have inflation, it's impacted healthcare as it has your grocery bill. We've seen pent-up demand because of COVID. We've seen betterments in technology. We've seen increased costs in hiring staff to staff hospitals and clinics. But we also know that those figures or those facts, it's not immune to Alaska. All jurisdictions have suffered for inflation, have had trouble hiring staff, have paid higher than they normally would for bringing in TDYs or temporary staff. So as we've watched these costs go up and up, we also were cognizant of the fact that in 2020, under the Trump administration, the No Surprises Act was passed. And what that did is it did not eliminate balanced billing, just as the 80th percentile did not eliminate balanced billing. But what it did was it put some transparency. It provided things that when you go to a provider, they are required to give you an upfront estimate of what your charges will be and what your insurance will pay. And that's both in-network and out-of-network. It also provides that your insurer should pay the charges subject to your deductibles and copay as an in-network provider for emergency services. Because at that point in time, you don't have time to find an in-network provider, and the law recognizes that. It also recognizes that with the best intentions, you could go to an in-network facility, let's just say Providence, and end up with an out-of-network provider. So it addresses those situations to give consumers protection, but it doesn't eliminate balance billing. It just provides a mechanism for transparency to consumers so that they can choose wisely. There is no doubt that in this process of addressing healthcare in the state of Alaska, the consumers are going to have a part in this. There's going to be a little bit of pain for all of us. Consumers are going to have to start looking and making decisions based on the NSA or the No Surprises Act, based on what their plan has for a network, if they will continue to see in-network providers or out-of-network providers. And that's painful if you've had a long-term relationship with a provider. But this is coming down to the needs of a few who might have an out-of-network provider they want to continue to see, as opposed to the needs of all who want to be able to afford health care at all.
On the slide.
I'm sorry, I thought Senator Geisel had questions, sir.
Let's finish the slide, then we'll pause for questions. I know you got questions from Senator Kaufman, Senator Geisel, then we'll go to Senator Tobin. And if it's the answers on another slide, we can refer to the slide and when you're ready to.
Mr. Chairman, I think I could take slides on our questions on this slide now.
Senator Kaufman?
Thank you. Through the chair to Director Wingheyer. This is an interesting slide, so I'm not surprised you're getting a lot of hits on it. I'm interested in the first text box where it says the regulation has been criticized for increasing the cost of healthcare in the state. And then the graph shows, you know, the rising and just, I guess, for those looking at home, if they're watching this online, that's the annual per capita physician and clinical services cost. So not cost of insurance, but cost of the underlying care. And so do we have evidence, it says that the regulation has been criticized, but do we have, later in the slide deck, will you have like evidence that shows that it is the driver, or it's the 75% driver, or it somehow is, it is the primary impactor of these of disproportionate healthcare cost increases?
Through the chair, I probably don't have it drilled down to that detail. Have we looked at the cost of healthcare overall in the state of Alaska and out-of-network claims and the increases? Yes, as we review filings. But have I drilled it down to bring it forward to you today? No. But we do know that in other states, and again, this I want to preface this by, this chart was developed, it's CMS data, so again, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. In late 2023, we hired a consultant to trend healthcare costs in Alaska for us, Risk and Regulatory Consulting. This is a graph they came back with, and we've given it to the media and such, so this has been out there, that it shows the U.S. average is the yellow, and the blue line is Alaska, and you can see right about 2004, when the 80th percentile went into effect, how our costs started to creep above the national average. And that's when we started to see it in our overall cost of healthcare, and our insurance also at the same time started that same trajectory path.
Yes, follow-up, Senator?
Thank you, through the chair. So that's a it's interesting that that's the inflection point, just as we're moving levers to try and improve our costs. It would just be great to know, you know, what the mix of drivers are. You know, certainly our location, some of the our challenges, they're all in there, but I don't know how we can get to it. But what we're really trying to do is pull that line down and make it, you know, more equivalent to other locations. And that's another thing that I guess I would like to know, if repeal of the regulation, will it have a reductionist effect? Will it, this line is trending up, are we going to like plateau off a bit and stay forever higher, or do you anticipate forces in taking these actions that it will somehow start to bend that line back down? And I guess this is turning into a lot of questions. And then where is that cost being taken from? So those costs exist right now. Somebody's getting paid for a service that costs a certain amount to deliver. And what kind of crunch is that creating? So in all these changes, I'm always interested in the risk management, the change management, and how we make sure that we do no harm, to borrow a medical term, as we try to, you know, move the needle. So I guess the question is, do we think there's mechanisms in here that will pull that down? Where does that slack come from? And then do we have line of sight on anything else that might be causing the high healthcare costs that we could address?
Through the chair, and I hope to get answer your entire question, because I was kind of, okay, first off, we do hope that, I mean, our entire intent of this was to bring down the cost of healthcare, to trend more towards national averages, and so that consumers could afford healthcare insurance, employers could afford healthcare insurance. We saw about a little over 2% in the rate filings for 2024 that impacted the 2024 rates, and we expect that we will see that continue through the next few years. At some point, perhaps it plateaus out, but we're not seeing that in the near future. As for looking at it for data, a few years ago, Senator Geisel had convened a committee to look at the cost of healthcare. And at that time, she challenged the division with going and looking at the cost of healthcare. We pulled, I don't know, Senator could jump in here. I want to say close to 100 CPT codes. We asked an independent consultant to compare those costs of those CPT codes to Seattle, North Dakota, Idaho, and one other in Alaska. And we asked them then to take those costs and give us a factor as a percent of Medicare. So if the cost for seeing an ear, nose, and throat was 1,500% of Medicare in Alaska, perhaps we saw in Montana it was 300%. So, I mean, we do have that data. That data has been on our website for years. Could we update it? Probably. It might be relevant, but it has, I mean, it's not 20 years old, but it is a couple years old. But we could see the difference between basically the same CPT code in Anchorage, Alaska, as opposed to Billings, Montana, or North Dakota, or Seattle, to see how much higher we were. And it is our hope that in maybe 10 years, we're a little bit closer to what I would say are, I don't want to say our competitors, but to other states. We pulled Montana, and I know North Dakota, and I want to say Idaho, but we pulled them because, and it might have been Wyoming, but we looked for small states, rural, oil and gas, those that we thought had similar demographics, to compare Alaska to. Now, granted, there's some factors. We're kind of on an island on, you know, in Alaska, but we shouldn't be that much higher, and we were. I hope that answers, and I'm certainly glad to go back and do more research to try and answer your question more directly, sir, if I didn't.
I think you hit the brunt of it. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Senator Geisel, then Senator Tilden.
Thank you. Thank you, Director, for reviewing what we had done. I think it was 4 years ago. Might have been five, actually. You know, right now, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District sends their folks outside to Seattle for healthcare. It's cheaper. We had a healthcare commission for many years, more than a decade, who repeatedly identified the 80th percentile as an issue that was increasing our healthcare. But my question is, how many in-network providers are, Are you seeing a change in the number of in-network providers since this was implemented on January 1st? I realize that hasn't been a very long period of time. But are you seeing any change? Are the insurance companies dropping providers? Is there some kind of impact from this change?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, we know that certain clinics and air ambulance services have reached out to insurers to go in network. I can't tell you how many, but we know that because some have called us to say, how do we come up with a contract? How do we do? The division does not have authority over network agreements, but we can certainly make introductions. I am not aware of any insurer dropping any provider because of the repeal of the 80th percentile.
Sure, it would be hard to assign causality, but I do have a list of providers who have been dropped, who have been contacted and said, we are canceling your contract by insurance companies. So I will actually see if I can get some names for you. I realize you don't monitor that. You don't have any control over that. So you probably have no way to collect that data other than individual reports calling you saying, I just got dropped. So anyway, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Tobin, then followed by Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's lovely to see you, Director. I have a few questions, and we've had many folks reach out to our office, so I want to present their questions to you as I too have these curiosities. And in your time here with us, you've mentioned that we're hoping to see you used the time frame 10 years that we'll see that hopefully the pancaking, our costs will reduce. And that seems like a long time from now. And so my first question really is around, why wasn't a reform or some sort of shift or change offered instead of a wholesale repeal? Was a reform considered? Was there any dialogue about potentially changing the 80th percentile rule to be more inclusive or encompassing, to expand access maybe to seniors or veterans who accept Medicaid and Medicare, and offering some other shifts before a wholesale repeal?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we have discussed this ad nauseum with the Department of Health and with the Department of Commerce. There's no easy way. We looked at different times, the 75th percentile would have made a difference. If we did it by segment of certain providers and inched our way into it, the fact of the matter is that this impact, if we look at the number of providers or the providers that are not in network, it's a small slice of the overall providers. Not because of the repeal of the 80th, but because of the cost of healthcare. We have seen more providers since probably going back to when Senator Giesel started her questioning, go in network. We have seen orthopedes go in network. We've seen heart institutes go in network, where before they weren't. They were out of network. So we have seen a shift of providers going in network, but there is still a small segment out there, probably services that are higher priced because of their specialty, that are out of network and are somewhat driving this.
Thank you, and oh gosh, my iPad just went out. Thank you, that was helpful. And I think within the slide and thinking about reforms, it is clear that the No Surprises Act is there to provide some of the protections that the 80th percentile did cover. And I'm just curious, as I don't know enough about the No Surprises, is what is the delta? Does the No Surprises cover everything that the 80th percentile did? Does it provide that complete protection? Is there some protections that consumers need to be more aware of? I hope that you can enlighten us so that we can encourage our constituents to really be thoughtful about how they access their medical care.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, the No Surprises Act was intended to reduce balance billing. It didn't eliminate them, neither did the 80th percentile. But what the No Surprises Act did was put some of the onus back on the providers and the consumer to kind of be buyer beware, that when you go in, that one, your provider is required to give you an estimate, and then you can make that decision. Under the 80th percentile, it really went to the insurance company. You went in, and they either pay the network charge or they pay the 80th percentile. And then the balance billing, I mean, you should have received a balance billing. But you really didn't have much as respects the consumer of an onus to look at it yourself and say, can I afford to pay $1,500 more for this service for an out-of-network provider? And so, again, we are going to have to work with consumers through this that just get the best bang, if you will, out of their healthcare dollars. They are looking at the protections under the NSA or the No Surprises Act, as well as network providers versus out-of-network. I hope that answered your question, Senator.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have one question specific to this slide, and I have a couple other questions that perhaps you can speak to here, or you have other slides to address them. With regard to this slide, it's interesting that people sort of point to 2004, because when I look at this slide, the first inflection is in 1996, where we started to diverge. And the real inflection is in 2001, 2002. And by 2003, 2004, I mean, if you look at the gray, we're already well above, and we're on a trajectory in 2002, 2003. And it looks like we just sort of maintain that trajectory. So what changed between 2000 and 2003 that caused us to jump so significantly before the 80th percentile went into effect?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I don't know that I can answer that accurately. I'll be happy to go back and research it. I would guess, and this is only because I was here in Alaska, is that we started to see more specialists. I mean, we started to see our medical community expand in Alaska prior to what it was when, let's see, when I moved up here in 1984. And I would guess that that is some of it, but I would have to go back and do some more research, sir, to answer the question.
Well, Director, to be honest, I don't think you should have to do the director that research. Whoever provided this slide and did this, you paid them, they should have done this. They should have been the answer, in my opinion. I mean, there's a huge... The actual jump is in 2000 to 2003, and then to point 2004 and say this is what caused it, it just doesn't make sense. But again, that's not on you at all. I mean, if you guys are able to provide that information, that would be really helpful. But I feel like whoever provided this slide and this graph misidentified where the inflection point is, or perhaps they just sort of accurately stated we were on trajectory, and the 80th percentile rule didn't seem to change our trajectory at all. You know, the costs kept going up. They didn't go down as we hoped they would. But I think that's the most, to me, I can draw from this slide. My broader questions, I think, will have to be addressed maybe in other slides. But it goes to a lot of what Senator Giesel was saying and what Senator Kaufman was saying about costs in network. So more folks are in network now. What's to prevent, you know, Premera, who has 70% of market share, or some other large insurer, going to these providers and saying, you know, this is what we're going to offer you. And, you know, it's however many percent, 10, 20, 30% less than you think you deserve. And you can take it or leave it. And if you leave it, there's not really a mechanism to access folks anymore because costs will be so much higher. So my question is, one, like, how dramatic have we shifted the power, market power sort of in these negotiations from the providers to the insurers? And then if we have, insurers can get a lower rate, what mechanism do we have to make sure the insurers pass that savings on to the consumers?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar. There are some statutes within Title 21, which is the Division of Insurance, that say that the reimbursements to providers have to be fair. And if someone were to call, again, I don't have any control over network agreements, but if a provider were to call us and say, I was reimbursed 5 cents on the dollar, then we would look at that and talk to the provider about making sure that the payment or the reimbursement was fair. Because we do not want to impact the medical community. I mean, as respects access to healthcare in the state of Alaska. That is not the intent of this. But there are some protections for both the consumer and the providers under Title 21. But frankly, they've got to call us to let us know. We only know what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. And we are always willing to talk to consumers, be it a provider or an individual consumer, about how their insurance paid their bill, to explain it to them if it was paid correctly, or to dig into it and make sure that it was paid correctly in the off chance that it wasn't. And sometimes we find those where they did mispay a bill, and we make them fix it. So that still remains in the statute. What isn't there is the floor of the 80th percentile anymore.
Can I ask a follow-up, Mr. Chair? So I guess my That's for, you know, unfair billing after the fact, but these agreements are sort of prior to the fact. And in that case, have we shifted power pretty dramatically to Premera and other insurers? And then again, my second question is really, insofar as, you know, to Senator Kaufman's question about hopefully this line will start to tilt downward or at least flatten out, but what's the forcing mechanism? If we have essentially a monopoly or close to a monopoly in this 15% slice, or oligopoly, I guess you could say, what actually causes them to pass any savings on to the consumers?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I'm going to jump to the Affordable Care Act for a minute. Just, and it is further back in the slides, but I want to answer your question on this. The Affordable Care Act says that in small group and the individual market, the insurance company has to spend 80% of the premiums on healthcare, or they have to return it to the provider or to the payer, the consumer. It's 85% on large group. So that is a federal law. I also want to touch just a bit, when we get a filing for, let's say, the 2025 healthcare rates, because they should start coming in late spring, early summer, there will be a line in there that says contingency. And what that means is profit for the insurance company, and they build it into their filings. In my tenure as director, I have never approved more than 5%, and I'm willing to bet I've never approved more than 3% of a profit margin or a contingency for a healthcare insurer. Now, as respects to negotiating, does Premera have the upper hand, or Moda, or Aetna, or any insurer up here? You're going to hear two sides of this. If you talk to the insurers, they're going to say that when we had the 80th percentile, they'd say either we take the 80th, we're going to take the 80th percentile, or we're going to stay out of network. And so there wasn't much to push the rates down. The providers will say, and we've heard from some, that they don't negotiate fairly. Where we've been asked, we have discussed this with the insurers and with the providers, but again, I have no statutory authority, sir. So I can have conversations, I can remind the insurers that the reimbursement has to be fair for the services provided, but I do not have the authority to enforce anything. So we go as far as we can without coming back and someone saying, you don't have authority anyway, you can't make me, the type of an argument.
Thank you very much, Director. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And before we go to Senator Giesel, I just wanted to ask a question here on this chart that Senator Dunbar referenced. This is from CMS. And I know Alaska is one of four states where our Medicaid rates are higher than our Medicare rates. And I was wondering if that was, and we can ask the Division of Department of Health, if that was when our Medicaid rates started to get that increase because of the state pay option. And when we started changing the rates of Medicaid, I was wondering when this diversion started to increase in that time period, because that sounds about the same time that the state started increasing their Medicaid rates, but we can verify that. I'm not sure if you...
Mr. Chairman, this chart has a whole report behind it, and I can go back and pull it, and perhaps it might. I think this one tells a story, so we put this up because it kind of shows that we're taking off a little bit higher than the other states, and that was the point, but we can certainly go back and look at if it was because of when Medicaid expansion became effective or what have you, if that's when we started to see or the higher rates were being paid under Medicaid, if that drove the cost.
All right. And we have Senator Giesel, then Senator Kaufman, and then we would like to continue on slides because we're only on 4, and I know you have lots of information to go through.
The director has answered my question. Thank you.
Senator Kaufman. Please continue.
All right. Just for your constituents that may be watching this or come back to watch this, just to show what the 80th percentile is, it's not 80%. A lot of people will quote it as being 80%, and it's not. You take the data, you look for the 80th percent, and then 20% is going to be above, 80% is going to be below. That's the 80th percentile. That's how it's computed. It's a data point that falls within the charges that are being submitted. And so just so people know how we come up or how the 80th percentile is determined. I went way too fast here. Okay, so then this we had talked about a little bit. And again, I want to reiterate that the Division of Insurance, the 80th percentile doesn't apply to self-insurance, doesn't apply to Alaska Care, Union Trust, Medicaid, Medicare. Indian Health Service, the military, meaning TRICARE, the VA. It's, again, it's 15% of the population that is regulated under the Division of Insurance, particularly the individual markets, small group, and large group markets. All right, this I want to give you a little bit of data on where, you know, there's been questions of healthcare rates going up in Alaska and why were we looking at repealing and such. So going back to when the ACA was passed, 2014, the rates were filed. 2015, and at this point we had four insurers in the state of Alaska offering in the individual market. We had Primera, Moda, Aetna, and Celtic. Our average rate increase was close to 32% the first year, close to 40% the second year. And by the third year, 2017, we had lost all the insurers except Primera. And we came to the legislature through the late Representative Kurt Olson asking for $55 million and the authority to go after a reinsurance program. It had never been done. And I think you all know that we were the first state to go after federal funding for a reinsurance program to try and stabilize our market. So recognizing that the cost of health care was going up, our first reaction back in 2017 or going forward was not repeal or deny access care to health care, deny access to health care. It was, let's start looking at a reinsurance program and seeing what we can do. So you can see where the reinsurance program became effective, and that first year, again, was all state funded. And at that point, it didn't go down, but boy, did it stabilize. And unfortunately, we were down to one insurer, but it was an insurer. We didn't lose them all. So that was the good news. The reinsurance program, to clarify, it does not apply to the small group or large group. We look at Maine passed a reinsurance program about 2 years ago for the small group. We've been monitoring that. What they did was they merged their small group and individual group. We looked at it a few years ago. It didn't make sense for us. We continue to look at other things we might do to bring down the cost of healthcare. But at this point, we're still pretty proud about the reinsurance for the individual market. As you can see, about 21 started to notice, I'd say 22, we started to notice an uptick again. Moda is now back in the market, and we started to notice the rates going up. And at that point, what I want to show you here, so again, a little bit of history or just some, you know, food for thought on this. When we came to the legislature for the $55 million, it was all state funding. We also, because that's how you get the 1332 innovation waivers through CMS, is it's quite a process, and you have to have an actuarial study to show how much money you need to stabilize the market, to put into your reinsurance program, what you think the anticipated results will be, how many people is it going to impact, and on and on. And we did. We used Oliver Wyman. And Oliver Wyman back in, so this would have been 16-17, predicted that we were going to need $59 million, close to 60, in 18, and then continuing up to 2024. Those were the numbers they told us that we were going to need to keep our market stable. I want to jump over to the third column. We get from the federal government our pass-through funding back to put in the reinsurance program. And you can see that starting in 2019, we have not had to use a penny of state funding, but we have actually been overfunded by the federal government and what we thought we were going to get and what we actually got. We have taken that overfunding, because they've allowed us to, and put it in the following years for the most part. Some we've kept back thinking, okay, because it's weird, such as you see 2024, I can't tell you how much I'm getting for the calendar year 2024 yet. We should get it any day. It's always after we've told the insurers what to count on. So we're required by the waiver to hold some money back to pay just in case our funding doesn't match what we've set the reinsurance limit at. So I'm showing you this because I want you to see that reinsurance in 2021, Oliver Wyman said you need $74 million and we put in $80. $79 in 2022 and we put in $100. $87, $88 and we put in $120. 2024, we put almost $50 million additional dollars in, and we've taken a 16% increase. There isn't any more money for me to put in the reinsurance program to stabilize this market. We're trying to find other solutions. I don't know how expensive our insurance would be. I hate to think of it if we didn't have this reinsurance program. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to have an additional $50 million next year to put in the funding to take it to 200 or 190. You know, we've used all the federal funding that we've received in prior years to keep this rate as low as we can for consumers, and you can see the numbers. Sir.
Yeah, Senator Giesel.
So, Director, will this repeal of the 80th percentile have an impact here?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, what we hope it does is bring down the cost of claims. That was the intent. But will it have an impact, a direct impact on the reinsurance program? No, ma'am.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So this is my where does it hurt slide. These are actual rates. And unlike your auto insurance where they say, well, you've got a 16-year-old son and he's got two tickets, a speeding ticket, so that's what we're going to rate your family car on. Now, in healthcare, everybody gets their own charge. So in this is a sample, and these are actual rates, the plan year 2024. My sample family one that I'm going to talk to you about, they picked a MOTA plan. They picked the silver plan. They've got two kids under 14, two parents, and their monthly premium is $2,758. With that, they've got a $4,500 deductible and an out-of-network max, out-of-pocket maximum $7,750 for each family member. They've got a $30 copay for primary care and $60 for specialists, and they still have copays or coinsurance, and they're still going to have a balance bill. That's what your consumers are paying. Sample family two, same 40-year-old parents, two kids under 14, but they picked a Primera Bronze plan. They wanted to try and save a little bit of money. And they also have a 20-year-old. Their monthly premium is $2,611. They have a $6,350 deductible with an $8,700 out-of-pocket maximum per member. Still have a $50 copay for primary, $100 copay for specialist, and they have coinsurance of $40 for in-network and 60% for out. That's what your consumers are paying. That's when it hits home, when someone goes on the market or talks to a navigator and says, how much is my health insurance going to cost me this year? These people cannot afford these premiums anymore. We're looking at people going uninsured because they can't afford the healthcare premiums. This is when it kind of the rubber hits the road for the division, when we see these premiums and what can we do. We have to start somewhere. We've got to come up with a plan. It's hurting Alaskans, the cost of health care, to drive it down.
Yes, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And through the chair, I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that I'm very lucky that I'm on government health insurance and that this is not something I need to consider. I am curious, as I know that the Alaskan population is aging. We have a graying of our citizens, not just here, but of course nationally. How is this repeal going to affect that population? I'm looking at this chart and I'm hopeful that you have some sort of magic thing that you're going to tell us that it's going to be wonderful. But I have deep fears.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, can we talk about that in just a second? I've got a slide that I want to address it then if I can. I recognize that's a question, and you're right to bring it up. If it's a...
That's fine.
So healthcare is complex. I think we all know that. And it's going to be hard, really hard to fix it. We're fragmented. We have federal programs, we have state programs, we have commercial markets, we've got VA, TRICARE, we've got workers' compensation. It's all over the board and they're all funded differently. And so it's sometimes like playing whack-a-mole. You hit something here and you've got to deal with something there. My responsibility as the director of insurance is this market that I regulate. And unfortunately, I don't control Medicare or Medicaid or VA. But it's going to take all of us to figure this out. In Alaska, since my tenure as the director, I've worked with Commonwealth North, I've worked with Chamber, I've worked with the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals, which used to be AHU. Healthcare Transformation Project has sprung up. The Alaska Healthcare Commission has talked about this. The Alaska Policy Forum, Alaskans Together for Medicaid, Alaskans for Sustainable Healthcare, our tribal healthcare partners, certainly the healthcare insurers and the providers. We've all been talking about this to how to deal with it. It's not going to be a simple solution. There is no simple solution. What works for one group may not work for the other. But we've got to work together. Things that Alaska doesn't have, maybe someday we will, that would help in some areas, manage more managed care. Putting an emphasis on primary care. There are things that we can do, but it's going to take steps. We can't do it all in one day. We've got to take steps, but there are things we think that can be done over a period of time to increase access to healthcare, but at the same time, lower the overall cost. Mr. Chairman, this is getting back to Senator Tobin's question. This is directly from the ADN on January 18th, and this is Dr. Compton, who was quoted, and this is part of the crux of the problem. And he's talking about the repeal of the ADN. It's going to make it harder for providers to subsidize care for Medicare and Medicaid recipients through their reimbursements from privately insured patients. And the fact is that the privately insured patients can't afford to subsidize it anymore. And do I have a full answer? No. But I know those that I have in my market can't afford to do it anymore. This cost shifting is a real concern. And as you know, we, as part of the repeal, we're working with the Department of Health of the funding I showed you from the federal government. We gave them $5 million to start looking at Medicaid rates for reimbursement. I know there have been conversations about Medicare. It's part of the whole solution. And we're going to have to attack them individually, if you will, to figure this out. But this cost shifting, insured markets, employers, they can't afford to subsidize Medicare and Medicaid. They just can't. And that's what the 80th percentile allowed them to do. We hope it does not have an impact. But we also know that there's providers, even when the 80th percentile was there, did not take Medicaid and Medicare. We are going to continue to work with the Department of Health, the Department of Administration, whoever it takes to deal with this. We hope that with HPUD, as we call it, the Health Payment Utilization Database, which is our intent language for an APCD, that will provide some answers. We hope to have it live either late spring, early summer. But it is a voluntary program. There's no statutory authority for insurers or payers to contribute their data. We have worked with insurers when they did their rates as to what they were going to pay out-of-network providers. For instance, Primera, we approved at 185% of Medicare, which is what AlaskaCare pays out-of-network providers. MOTA took a little bit different tact, which we also approved. They're going to continue to use the 80th percentile until the state comes up with a different plan, subject to 400% of Medicare. So we are continuing to work with it. We're still meeting with providers. There are some providers that call us. The hospitals and facilities and other independent groups have been very open to continuing to work with the division and the Department of Healthcare on looking at other reimbursement methods that would work. In November, the Department of Commerce put out a request for information. Basically, we know that so many groups have been working on healthcare throughout the Alaska and put those proposals forward. The due date is March 1st. Our intent is to review the proposals, bring in independent consultants, and see if there's merit in proposing to take those proposals further than just on paper.
Before you go on, if you can go back a couple of slides, Senator Giesel had a question.
Well, yeah, you don't necessarily have to go back, but you said that you were going to put in place an all payers claim database?
Through the chair, no, we are not putting in place in all payer claims database. We received funding, as did the Department of Health, to do this health payment utilization database. It's voluntary. So we're going to have AlaskaCare, Medicaid, and we have asked Primera and MOTA to contribute their data. But because it is volunteer, it is not going to be as robust as had we been able to do an all-payer claims database.
I see. So it's similar to, but not as robust as.
Yes,
okay. Ma'am. And follow up?
Yes.
And you said that you had used Fair Health somewhere back in one of these other slides. You cited them. So they have this kind of data also, I assume.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, yes, they do. But Fair Health is, one, they're expensive, and two, like, as the division, if we go in, we get like three tries, you know, to pull data for three. They were who we contracted with when you asked us to prepare that study of the 100-120 CPT codes. That was Fair Health we used then. But it was a contract basis for a specific project.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, Director, we talked about this last year, actually, this the all-payer claims database, and you mentioned that it's not really that. It's voluntary. But I thought you'd indicated that Primera was willing to, you know, was indicating that they were going to do so. Has Primera and MOTA been participating?
Through the chair, Primera has committed to proposing or to participating, and I expect that MOTA would too, but as of yet, we have not finalized with MOTA.
Can I ask a follow-up, Mr. Chair? So we had this conversation last year, and I think that the answer was much the same with regard to Primera. What, I guess it's been almost a year. What's kind of the, why is it taking so long for them to provide this data?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I don't think it's taking them too long. It was getting the database built and then being able to accept the data. But I don't think they've dragged their heels on providing the data.
Senator Dunbar, I'd interject. Did I know the RFP went out in October to build the database to find a vendor. Can you talk about where we may be at with in terms of building the database and having a platform for that?
Mr. Chairman, we contracted with OnPoint, and the database is pretty much built. But as you might expect with different systems and different payers, the data has to come in a standardized format. So we're working with not only Primera, but with AlaskaCare and Medicaid to get that format. I mean, because it's not just going in and separating cells on an Excel spreadsheet, but to get it to come in so that it's actually relevant.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So going back to something that Senator Gail Tobin had said about other reform measures, I mean, do you think it's possible that you will get this database stood up and you'll get all this data, and that will lead you to sort of change your mind on what we did, the process we're currently going through? Because we sort of made the big change, and now we're getting the data. We had the other data that Senator Giesel mentioned, but if the data from Alaska turns out to be not exactly what you're expecting, how could it shift the process we've just gone through? I mean, I don't think you're going to put the 80th percentile back into effect, but is there any other reform you could see coming out of analysis of the data you might receive?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I think that, you know, we have, as we've worked with the Healthcare Transformation Project, as we've worked with others, the Healthcare Commission and others throughout the years, reference-based pricing always comes up to come up as a means, and that would basically be that you look at a provider and it would vary by provider. Let's say that we agree that we're going to reimburse primary care at 240% of Medicare and something like that. I mean, there are others out there, but we've been stuck in on the 80th percentile, and I think that whatever comes out of this, it's not going to just be Commerce. It's going to be a statewide program that we would see changes in the privately insured market, but also then those are federally funded, or such as Medicaid, Medicare, where you're seeing government funds. I shouldn't say federal, but where you're seeing state funds, that we're all going to have to come in and say this is what we agree to pay to make it sustainable and not one party paying so much more than others.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Giesel.
So in the repeal bill for the 80th percentile that I offered, I think it was 2017 or 18, I can't remember, but I did have reference-based billing in there of 300% of Medicare for primary care. So that would, this database would give you the verification that certain level or lower, whatever, would be appropriate, basically setting healthcare costs, so to speak.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, it is our intent that we are able to say that, okay, this is what the charges are, and to keep it that we look at Medicare and be, a reasonable reimbursement or payment for the services. And it may vary depending on specialty, primary care. I expect it will vary. But yes, and when we get the data, to be able to analyze our own data, I think will be very beneficial for many of us that are working on this.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Please continue.
Just some frequently asked questions. I think in your packet, we gave you the frequently asked questions that we have put on our website for consumers that want to know what our role is. As you know, our primary role is protecting consumers. And hard as it is to believe, we think we took this action to protect consumers so that they can afford health care insurance and access to health care. These questions, again, are up there. It's probably nothing you don't already know. Again, if a consumer feels they are being balance billed unfairly, they come to the division. If a provider doesn't think they're being reimbursed fairly, they can come to the division, and we will work with them to make sure we do have some authority to do that. Again, talking about rates, we're required by statute to look at rates. We're required to make sure that the rates are adequate, that they're not excessive, but they are adequate, and that they are not unfairly discriminatory. We also, when we are doing filings, we look at healthcare trends or trends overall. We look at what has been paid in the past, what we expect using inflationary figures and such that the future will bring. We look at, the most important thing that we do at the division is make sure insurance companies are solvent. So we always have to be respectful of what their financials look like when we're looking at rate increases or rate decreases. Can they justify their book of business based on the rates they filed? Because I would never want to be in a position where claims could not be paid because we approved too low of a rate filing and the company had to go into liquidation. So we take it very seriously, and we have not been able to hire an actuary for a couple of years in the division, but we have contracted actuaries on staff that we use to work with the division staff to review all filings. And again, we've got in statute, they have to be adequate without being excessive. And that is what we are charged with. And Mr. Chairman, I think that brings me to the end of my presentation.
And I will just say, I believe that the department will also pay for an actuarial person to take those five exams. There's three exams that are required, right? And then you have those couple optional ones to become an actuary. The department has a great plan for anyone that's listening who would like to become an actuary.
And I think we've taken the classification up like higher than the governor or something. We've taken it as high as we can to make us competitive with the commercial market to get actuaries, and we just have not been successful. But we've looked at telework. As the senator said, we've said, okay, if you have your degree and want to be an actuary, we'll help you with the test. We'll work on something, and we just have not been successful on it.
All right. Thank you. And I just wanted to go back to a statement that you made earlier about the HBUD, the database, health utilization database. It's not required yet because there is no statute to help to entities or to encourage other health entities to submit claims. But the more claims you get in the database, the more useful that data is. And do you feel the department may later years go forth and look at some statutes to help incentivize healthcare providers to input the data?
Mr. Chairman, I think that is absolutely a door that's wide open. I think at one point, Senator Giesel, you probably sponsored the first APC bill, then I think you and Senator Von Emhoff looked at it. I think the governor had a bill up. I think there's no doubt that the state overall would like to see an APCD, but we have not been able to get it across the finish line.
Thank you. Senator Giesel.
Yeah, the cost was an issue. Director, I'm wondering if this repeal of the 80th will help the situation. Where healthcare companies who are located in the lower 48 were charging 80th, based on the 80th percentile because the patient was in Alaska. That was quite a scam. That should be addressed by the repeal.
Through the chair, we most definitely hope it is.
Thank you.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The data I didn't see up there in the presentation, which is something that, again, Senator Kaufman pointed to, is any projections on how this is going to actually bend that curve. I guess I'd like to know, I mean, you must have done some kind of projections in order to repeal, right? So I mean, do you have any sense, is it 5%, 10%? I mean, what kind of, we all agree that the premiums are too high. What reduction in premiums or slowing the increase of premiums is the division projecting based on a repeal?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I need to go back and look at that question, and I'm not trying to avoid it, but when we say that the cost will come down because of the 80th, which we firmly believe it will, we also are cognizant at the same time inflation can keep it up. Sure. So you gain 5 points over here and lose 4 over here. And sometimes we have a problem separating that out to figure out how much of it was because the 80th was repealed and how much of it was because of technology, how much of it was because of what other factors are impacting healthcare filings or the rates that year. But we will go back and take a look and see what we can come up to give you a little bit better explanation.
Thank you. Can I have one more question, Mr. Chair? So, you know, we're dealing with a problem now, sort of workforce Alaska more broadly. Is there any worry that the repeal of this will lead to any healthcare workers sort of leaving the state or any increase for whatever reason of patients going out of state?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, we sincerely hope not. Again, we know that we had 10% of our market was out of network providers, and that's who's impacted by this. And we sincerely hope that it does not have an impact. I can't make, nor can you make anybody stay in the state, but we think that knowing that how many are already in network, we're not expecting it to have a dramatic impact on access to healthcare.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee members? Director, you have any other closing comments or commissioner?
No, but I, Mr. Chairman, the committee members, I thank you very much for having the time to discuss this today. I appreciate it.
All right, Senator DeGeese.
And Director, I just so appreciate your work. Thank you. You are so knowledgeable. It's just mind-boggling. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We definitely appreciate and we're lucky to have Director Winghire with the Division of Insurance, especially with the reinsurance program. I think you made national news and really got the attention of folks. And so we are lucky to have such a rock star in the division.
Thank you.
With that, on Thursday, we will consider and take public testimony on Executive Order 125, eliminating the Council on Emergency Medical Services. Any closing comments from committee members? Not. We are adjourned at 4:33 p.m.